Age of Empires, looking for scams on Reddit, powerlifting. What do those things have in common? They're all things that are related to the guest that we have in today's episode of Cube FM. Her name is Jen, and she's an expert on those three things and also is really into network policies. In this episode, Jen shared her experience with debugging network policies and the importance of observability in troubleshooting. She also discusses the trade-offs and worthiness of network policies, the role of custom resource definitions, something we love to speak about here at Cube FM, and also her passion for security. Network policies, you know, they're essential for securing Kubernetes clusters and controlling network access. Jen spoke about the trade-off between the complexity of network policies and the level of security they provide. You'll find more about that in today's episode. And speaking of network policies, today's episode is sponsored by Autorize. Are you tired of wrestling with AWS AIM, Google Cloud AIM, Azure AIM, network policies, and database access? Say goodbye to that headache and say hello to Autorize. Autorize offers a declarative and zero-trust approach to access management, allowing you to declare workload IAM within your Kubernetes cluster while ensuring maximum security. Visit Autorize.com to get started with their free forever plan today. All right, Jen, so what three emerging Kubernetes tools are you keeping an eye on?
So I will admit the last few months have been really busy for me in my personal life. I've had other priorities, so I've been spending less time on Reddit, like keeping an eye on what's going on. So I don't have anything specific. But one thing that I am sort of curious to see how it plays out, I know there's a lot more talk about AI now at the moment, right? So I don't know, you're at KubeCon, I don't know if you've seen AI and Kubernetes start to fuse together. I can tell by the look on your face, yes. So I definitely want to keep an eye on that.
Definitely a good idea to keep an eye on that. There's been a lot of conversations in KubeCon about that topic. A lot of the keynotes were focused on that. And I think we can expect to see more. I think that's a very good thing to keep your eye out for. Like you said, you know, you choose Reddit as your way of staying up to date. Other folks might look in other places, but it's certainly a good spot to catch news around that. So now tell us more just though about yourself. What do you do and who do you work for?
So currently I'm a technical marketing engineer at Tigera, who are the sort of creators and maintainers of Project Calico. So I guess being technical marketing, when I first took the job, I'd never heard of technical marketing engineer position before. It was kind of new to me. So it's still very hands-on with Kubernetes, learning, getting in with a product, configuring things, but more about, I guess, educating people about what Calico as a CNI can do.
Before getting into that role, what were your previous roles? Where were you working? What kind of stuff were you working on?
I took a weird path to Kubernetes. In my previous role, I was a technical support engineer specialist. And I was working for a company, like a software company that made a geospatial ETL tool. So I came from the geospatial background, like GIS, environmental science at university. Ending up getting into like software with data conversions. So I don't know how many people listening would know what ETL is, but you're basically taking different types of data, different formats, and then you can convert it to other formats of data. You can enrich it as that data gets converted. So you can bring multiple sources of data together, join them, and then get an output that you need. So that software, which is called FME, had an enterprise component to it. So instead of just building those workflows, you would then start to automate them. So that's where I moved into, is supporting the enterprise product, which eventually led on to me supporting the cloud and container version of that product. So I started supporting cloud customers who was kind of like a SaaS product, as well as anyone installing on Docker and Kubernetes. And admittedly, I knew nothing about Docker and Kubernetes when I had to start supporting these customers. So it was a steep learning curve, but I really enjoyed the challenge of Kubernetes. I also really enjoyed like making presentations, training people. So that kind of led me into technical marketing.
Fantastic. And, you know, you mentioned previously about, you know, Reddit as being a one source, you know, a resource to find out about new tools, different tools, things happening in the ecosystem. Are there other resources that you tend to use in terms of things that might help you stay up to date? Because as you well know, it's a very quickly moving ecosystem. There's all kinds of stuff coming out all the time. What works best for you?
I think Reddit is probably the main one just because I spend so much time on Reddit anyway. Personally, it's like easy to just keep diving in and seeing the Kubernetes stuff go by on your home feed. I used to spend more time on Twitter, or I guess X now, back in the day, but I think I was more in the geospatial community. I've tried to find a lot of names more in the Kubernetes space, but I feel like Twitter just maybe isn't as big as it once was, or I'm just following the wrong people. but I know a lot of people at work seem to sort of keep in touch with Hacker News, I believe it is. I personally haven't got into that one yet.
Fair enough. But yeah, like you said, found something that worked for you and sticking to it. Now, in terms of, you know, the topics that we want to look at today, your journey with Tagera and Calico started before joining the company. Could you share with our audience what happened before you jumped ship?
It was kind of a good coincidence in a way. Like, Tagera had approached me, and at the time I thought I knew Kubernetes, but it turns out I didn't really know Kubernetes at all, which is probably the case for a lot of people. So as I started looking into more about what Tagera did, what a CNI was, what network policies are, at my previous job, I was supporting people who were installing the product, like the Kubernetes deployment of the product. And one customer had been using OSM, Open Service Mesh, and they had implemented policies. So at the time, I'd never seen anyone before come to me with like security question in Kubernetes. So this was the first time being exposed to it. So the application that I was supporting for their Kubernetes deployment had multiple pods. So like each, I guess, service or part of the application was a different pod. So I knew they would all communicate within a cluster, but I didn't know that you could add network policies and kind of block or control that communication between pods within a cluster. So at the same time, I had a customer coming to me with issues about Open Service Mesh. I was also beginning my journey of looking into Tagera and Calico and network policies to interview for them. So a lot of rapid learning all at once. And I still didn't feel like super confident with it, but I was at least beginning to get exposed to, okay, you can actually do this, because none of the customers I'd worked with before had ever sort of come to me with those security concerns or network policies.
And particularly, you know, it sounds like there was an incident, you can tell us more about it, with related to OSM and FME. Some of our audience members might not be familiar with those. Can you walk us through and say, you know, explain exactly what that incident was?
As I mentioned, I was helping people with their Kubernetes installations of FME. So the enterprise version of FME had multiple components. So there was like a Redis cache, there's a database, which was Postgres. There was like a core pod, which is kind of like the brain of FME, which would, I guess, delegate tasks. The pods that would actually do the data transformation in the ETL were called engines. So I was supporting people who would use a Helm chart to deploy all of that, and then all of these pods would be inside their cluster. One customer using Open Service Mesh, I believe they were using policies with Open Service Mesh. So as they were doing that, and they're kind of locking down that communication between all of those different parts of FME, I think they had opened a majority of the ports that were listed in our documentation, but had missed one port pool. So I think it was easy to target the like obvious ports. Okay, you talk to Postgres on 5432, open that. But when the pods would initiate communication on one port and then move off to a port pool to like carry on that communication, that was one of the things they missed. So to them, in some circumstances, the application wasn't working properly. And it was really hard to narrow down exactly what it was when they thought they had built the policies to allow all of the communication that was needed.
So there's an issue, right? What's your thought process at this exact moment? You know, how did you address this?
In the beginning, it was probably like, oh my gosh, I've never even heard of Open Service Mesh. I've never heard of network policies. Like, what is going on? So I think it was more like looking for similar behavior in the past that we had seen from, I guess, more traditional deployments where people might be installing different parts of FME on different virtual machines and then using firewalls, essentially the same thing as what was going on in their cluster. So as it was around the time I was interviewing for Tigera, I think I was starting to be made aware of network policies. So I also did try to install and get open service mesh running, but I didn't have any success with that to try and like reproduce the issue. Cause that's the other thing I really like to do is set up an environment that matches what a customer is experiencing and sort of get in there and play yourself. But I wasn't, unfortunately, unable to set that up. So it was kind of hard on my end. I had access to the product and the product knowledge, and I knew what ports needed to be open, but I didn't have the experience with Open Service Mesh. They had the experience with Open Service Mesh, but not with FME. So I think there was some disconnect there, which made it hard for both of us to kind of figure out what the issue was.
And, you know, what was the fix and how long did it take to figure that out?
So embarrassingly, they came up with a fix, not me. I was kind of stuck. I couldn't reproduce it. I was like, here's the ports you need. They say they had opened them. But then a few weeks later, we all got on a call and it turns out they had just missed one rule in one policy to allow access on a port pool that I believe the database needed to communicate over. So once they added that into their network policy, they were good and the application was working as expected. But I think hunting down that port pool that was blocked took them a while.
With that in mind too, it's come up numerous times in different episodes about, you know, network policies. Some people may not be completely familiar with what they are. Can you just establish for our audience, you know, what they mean to you, how you define them?
So network policies, I mean, if you're already in Kubernetes, you're familiar with like the YAML manifests. Network policy is a way of describing how you want to control network access to different pods in that YAML manifest. So you would describe you want one pod to be able to access another pod, or pods in a namespace to access pods in another namespace by writing that YAML manifest. And kind of similar to the way you would set up firewalls in virtual machines, except with Kubernetes, pods don't always stick around for very long. So it's hard to tie things to like a static IP address or anything like that that's kind of fixed. So these network policies work based on labels. So it makes it a lot easier, in my opinion, to tie one of these policies to a group of pods with a label, and you know that traffic is secured to or from those group of pods. And then you can do that as well for like ingress rules, egress rules. So you can really control that network access to anything in your cluster, really.
All right. Now, you mentioned in the article, you know, several weeks of debugging. It sounds like the problem was pretty difficult to test and then to reproduce. Was that the case?
I believe so. I think on my end, it was more difficulty setting up Open Service Mesh. As someone who's new to it, I didn't 100% know what I was doing. And I feel like it was, again, another one of those steep learning curves for Kubernetes. Now I feel like I get it more. It's easier. And I feel like this is similar for the customer. I don't know exactly what products they had apart from OSM, but I imagine there was no easy visibility into what was going on in their cluster. Like they couldn't see any traffic flows that were trying to be made and then getting denied. So they lacked that visibility and insight into their cluster network traffic to troubleshoot.
And so what's the way to fix it? Is there a way to inspect and observe the issue without spending weeks of troubleshooting?
So what I did when I started working at Tigera, I realized that they had a product that has something called a service graph. So as soon as you connect a cluster into Calico, it basically comes up with this topological view of everything inside your cluster. So if you've got pods in there, you've got services, those are all visible with lines going between each object. So you can see that there is traffic flowing. So as I first started, I was like, oh, I remember this problem I had back when I was working at Safe. I want to test it and see how easy it would be to solve the issue now. And I feel like having just a visual representation of all the traffic going on in your cluster, as soon as you can see that a policy is denying traffic that you've set up accidentally, it was really easy to spot that because you just get a big red line. So you can see that, okay, traffic is not communicating with the database. And then you solve it basically in minutes. So I think anyone using any kind of observability, you would solve that so much faster. But even now, depending on the CNI, I believe the Project Calico enables you to set one of the actions in your network policies to log. So that could have been another sort of workaround. Okay, we've implemented all these policies, it's not working. Let's add more policies just with that log action and see what is coming out of those logs. It would take you a bit longer to read through a whole bunch of logs, but hopefully it would help you troubleshoot that faster if you didn't have observability.
Calico is a paid product. Have you seen or used open source tools that have some overlap with it and can help engineers perform the same tasks?
I haven't come across any or used any, but I believe there's tools like FluentBit, which works with logs. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I haven't tried it myself personally. And some people, Prometheus sometimes comes up, but I feel like that's more of a metrics type thing rather than observability, monitoring that network traffic in the same way. So I personally haven't.
One of our previous guests, Ori, he expressed unique opinions on network policies, mentioning that the usage of network policies is inverted. If you need to contact a pod in a different namespace, you need to contact the other team responsible for it and have their network policy amended instead of modifying your own network policies. Do you agree with Ori?
I don't know. I think it's hard. And I feel like I remember reading that when it first came out a little while back. And I feel like there would still be a learning curve, I think, to what they're proposing or like what they believe their solution is to that. Because I think the problem that took me so long to troubleshoot is that it was just a completely new domain for me. And had I had prior experience with network policies, I don't think they're hard. It just takes a little while to get the hang of. So I feel like that would maybe be the same if you're kind of achieving the same thing, but in a different way. You're still going to have to learn what you're doing. And actually, I was kind of curious about this because I'm not on the ground in an organization like implementing this for anyone. I actually was curious and posted on Reddit asking, like, are people using network policies? And if not, why not? Or if you are, why? And I feel like a lot of the opinions there for people that are implementing network policies is that, I guess once you get it going, it's not that hard. And I feel like if your organization is maybe set up right, I don't know if right is the right word, but you've got someone that maybe has an overall view or a holistic view of the different policies that are going on, that team would be able to be like, okay, these people want to talk to these people. Okay, we can see that, we can manage that, instead of having the developers do that themselves with their own applications. So it might depend on who is trying to do this, the size of the organization, the skill level in that organization, how much support they get. So that seemed to be the theme from the people replying on Reddit to what the right approach is.
And it's interesting that you asked that because, you know, our previous guest, Ori, he argues that, you know, that network policies are not the right abstraction. And, you know, hearing your story about spending weeks debugging a port mismatch, you know, might make some people think that we should just give up on them entirely altogether. But, you know, as you saw from Reddit, you know, seeing different responses, are they worth it at all? But would you say that there's always a trade-off or we're going to rule that out? What do you think about that?
It depends on what you're actually putting in Kubernetes, to be honest. If you're deploying like production level applications with sensitive data that you need to make sure it doesn't go down, you don't want someone to compromise that cluster and then be able to travel laterally through it if they like compromise your front end and it's in the same namespace or cluster as your back end and someone gets access to that. I think network policies, you're probably going to want to spend the time investing upfront to learn and implement those correctly. Otherwise, the time and money that you're going to spend correcting an issue if something goes wrong, probably way worse than just the initial effort. So I think if you need it, I think learning and setting up the network policy is definitely worth it. But at least for me, if I'm setting up something quickly to test, I'm not also going to spend a long time writing network policies. You're going to do that based on how secure I think you need something or even organization, what their like security strategy is. If some people are going very zero trust, They want everything locked down. I think network policies are going to be worth it.
Now, Calico, Cilium, and maybe a few other network plugins have custom resource definitions, a superset of the Kubernetes network policies. In the case of Calico, we're talking about, you know, network policy and global network policy objects. Do you think network policy and their APIs are too limited and should be redesigned?
I don't know if they're too limited, but I guess some of the features that I feel like come with using Calico as a CNI, like being able to do global policies, can make network policies easier, because now instead of defining lots of network policies to target each thing, you can apply more like blanket policies, which might make things easier. And if it was in Kubernetes as is, might be more approachable. People might find that more. Yes, I don't know. I feel like maybe once people pick a CNI, they kind of stay with it. I don't think people are like having like five different CNIs in their thing and then getting confused about what to do. So I don't really see that as an issue.
Totally fair. No right or wrong answer. And, you know, from these 2 weeks of debugging, what do you take away from it? What are your key takeaways? What could you have done differently if you had to go back in time?
I guess if I went back in time with the knowledge I have now, that would be handy. I think just knowing other ways to troubleshoot it. Like back then, I didn't have access to Calico or any other product that had observability. So I think it would just be knowing, okay, give me all your policies if they could, so I could read through them, double check. And even one of the tools that we do when we present workshops to kind of test and prove communication is just going inside the pods and using something like Netcat. Can I go and communicate with this other pod? And then it might take a little while, but going inside each of the pods that I suspect, based on my product knowledge, is maybe the issue, and just going and testing all of that one by one. So, but if I didn't have the knowledge I have now, it would be another case of go and spend a few days intensively learning network policies and then reapproach the issue, instead of trying to like, oh, I'm going to try and reproduce it without fully understanding what I'm doing. But I guess when you're doing customer support, you don't have the luxury of time.
Certainly not. Yeah. So yeah, you have to think on your feet and make moves. Yeah, that all that makes sense. Now, where did your passion for security start? Where and when? How did that happen? What brought you into it?
I think it was just partly interesting because it was something new. Like I mentioned, when I was at Safe, none of the customers came to me ever, apart from this one case, with security issues. So I guess ignorance on my part, I didn't really know or understand what security looked like in Kubernetes. So when I was starting to look into Aigero, I was like, whoa, there's actually a lot here and it makes sense. So I think part of it was the challenge and just being interested to go and learn something new. And like I had read things like the Phoenix Project, and I had read a book on security. I can't remember what it was now, but about cybersecurity and how, like, I guess sophisticated that all is and how many things go on that you probably have no idea about. So I think from that standpoint, it's interesting. And I feel like it's also a bit of a hot topic. You always see people getting hacked. And there was a big one in Vegas recently, and I actually really enjoyed going into the cybersecurity subreddit and reading what everyone was saying was going on, like how they got breached, how they got taken down so badly. So I find that quite interesting.
And following up with the, you know, the Reddit point, you know, we can, from what we saw, it seems that you're an avid reader of you know, Reddit scams. And how does someone work in security and then spend time browsing that kind of, those kind of, you know, that kind of content? Is there something we should know, Jen?
No. I wouldn't be working for Taigera if I was a big, like, scam person.
Certainly hope not.
Yeah. I don't know. I just find it interesting. And I guess I almost feel bad. I guess we come with a, I don't know if it's a privilege, like we have pretty advanced technology. So when we see these sketchy emails coming from people like, oh, here's a delivery from some mail provider you're not receiving a package from, go and give all your information. And like, I feel like we can easily spot like phishing links more than the average person, like my nan, for example. So I like to sort of see what the latest scams are. And I guess it would be cool to educate more people, I feel like, to avoid those things that maybe aren't as tech savvy as we might be. So
that's good. All right. When you're not doing that, it looks like you're into Age of Empires 4 and powerlifting. Tell me more about that.
So I feel like Age of Empires actually is something I used to play with my dad as a kid. And now I've moved to Canada. My dad and brother are still in England. It's actually a really good way for us to connect and just play games online and keep in touch. But I will admit, I'm not the best. I tried playing online against like strangers once, and then that was the only time. I got defeated so fast. And powerlifting too. I'm actually the president of the British Columbia Powerlifting Association. So aside from competing and training, I spend a lot of time running the organization, putting on events, and doing all of that. So it takes up a lot of my free time.
Yeah, that's a good way to have no free time between scams, Age of Empires, yeah, and the time change from British Columbia to the UK.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Running powerlifting events. I'm impressed. So yeah. What's next for you?
So the powerlifting scene has calmed down a little bit. So I would like to go back to writing a few more blogs on Medium, because my goal with those was Kubernetes is definitely a steep learning curve. And I found that when I was at Safe Software and I was supporting customers, a lot of them are having to use this technology but don't fully understand it. So I wanted to try and share my learnings in a very accessible way for people. So I would like to get back, write a few more blogs, still stay busy with the powerlifting side of things.
All right. Well, that sounds good. And if people want to get in touch with you, whether it's about scams, network policies, powerlifting, et cetera, what's the best way to do it?
Probably LinkedIn. I check LinkedIn more. I'll occasionally still go on Twitter, X, if people want to connect with me there. But probably less so, like I mentioned, maybe the right people will start following me now. And that'll be better discussions. But
could be the case. Could be the case. Jen, thank you very much for your time today and your hard work on getting this information out there. Like you said, there is a steep learning curve. And by having these kind of resources, it makes it that much easier for folks out there to not have to suffer so much when learning some of these challenging topics.
Definitely. That's the goal.
All right. Thank you very much. Cheers.